There is a fifth dimension, beyond that which is known to man. It is a dimension as vast as space and as timeless as infinity. It is the middle ground between light and shadow, between science and superstition. It lies between the pit of man's fears and the summit of his knowledge. This is the dimension of imagination. It is an area which we call the Twilight Zone.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Dimensions, a Twilight Zone podcast. On tonight's episode, we will be discussing Season 2, Episode 16, titled A Penny for Your Thoughts. This episode was written by George Clayton Johnson, directed by James Shelton, produced by Buck Houghton, music by Marius Constant, Renee Gerowink, Bernard Herrmann, and Fred Steiner. In the cast were Dick York, June Dayton, Dan Tobin, and Cyril Delavante. Its original air date was February 3rd of 1961, and as always, you can watch it on Paramount Plus, Tubi TV, Freevee TV, or the DVDs and Blu-rays, and if you have the ability, I recommend, if you're still into getting physical media, get the Blu-ray. It's not expensive, and it's definitely worth the price you pay. Now, fair warning ahead, as always, there will be spoilers. So if you haven't seen this episode since it first aired, or you haven't seen it in a while and don't remember it, or if you've never seen it, there will be spoilers in this episode of the podcast. So if you haven't seen it, pause this now, go watch it, come back, and listen to the end of the episode, or the rest of this episode, I should say. Now, with that being said, I know I've been absent for a while. I don't know if all 15 of you have noticed or not, but it's been a few weeks since I have put out an episode, and I had to go away for work, and then got sick along the way with, I don't think it was the flu, but it certainly did not feel good. So my apologies for not getting more episodes out in a timely manner, and for the 15 of you that actually listen, that may have been wanting to hear me drone on about a 72-year-old television program, my apologies for that. But with that being said, let's get into the opening narration. Mr. Hector B. Poole, resident of the Twilight Zone. Flip a coin and keep flipping it. What are the odds? Half the time it will come up heads, and half the time tails. But in one freakish chance in a million, it'll land on its edge. Mr. Hector B. Poole, a bright human coin, on his way to the bank. So the story opens with Dick York as Hector B. Poole, who works at a bank, and he's on his way to work, and he decides to stop and pick up a newspaper, as you do. It seems like a nice day. He comes up out of the subway. He wants to buy a paper. He throws his quarter into the bin of the newspaper man selling newspapers, and as luck would have it, it lands directly on its edge, and the newspaper man, of course, you know, is surprised by that because it's a one in a million thing. This causes Mr. Hector B. Poole to, you know, not think much of it. It doesn't really seem, you know, enamored by it as much as the newspaper man. And so he decides to start going to work. He goes to cross the street, jaywalking, and almost gets hit by a car. And as a matter of fact, gets knocked down by the car from being thrown off balance, what have you. And we then find out, after the man helps Mr. Poole up, that Hector B. Poole now has the ability to hear people's thoughts. And, of course, he hears people Like the guy that almost hit him with the car, you know, call him names and wish he'd broke his neck and this sort of thing. he bumps into a man on the street and the man, you know, says, you know, some things to him that you wouldn't probably normally say, or at least back then you probably, you might today, but back then you wouldn't normally say to a random person that you may have just bumped into on the street. So Hector B. Poole, for some unexplained reason other than a coin landing on its edge, can now hear people's thoughts. Of course, this kind of throws him off his game a little bit. He gets to work a little late, about 10 minutes, and he realizes he can hear people's thoughts again. So he starts listening to kind of people's thoughts, and he starts basically answering the questions that they have in their head or responding to inner dialogues that the people are having with themselves. And of course they all think he's a nutter, because he's essentially talking to himself and no one realizes that he's talking about whatever they're thinking about. So that's pretty much the premise of the episode. I mean, Hector B. Poole can hear people's thoughts, and it's his response and his action or inaction to those thoughts that drives the episode. I will say, it seems to be very selective on whose thoughts he can hear and who he can't, because he's on a busy street and he can only hear people, it seems, that are within a, you know, 3-foot radius of him. So, in a way, I guess that's a good thing, because if you're on a crowded street with, say, 50 or 100 people on the street and you can hear everyone's thoughts, it would drive you batty. So you wouldn't want to hear that. But luckily, Mr. Poole can only hear people if he's within, you know, a couple of feet of them. So he gets to work late. He goes into his office, into his boss's office, to explain to him why he was 10 minutes late to work. Where he overhears his boss talking to his girlfriend, not his wife, his girlfriend, Felicia, and discussing the weekend getaway that they will be having, of course, without his wife. And, of course, Hector overhears him talking, or thinking, I should say, about this. And this, of course, comes full circle around back at the end of the episode when Hector gets a promotion, but we're not there yet. So he hears other people in the bank, random customers, the security guard talking about baseball, and of course Miss Turner, who is a secretary in the accounts division, and she's kind of sweet on him. He's kind of sweet on her. But neither one have done anything, you know, toward that. But she seems to really be taken by him. And, you know, there are a few different scenarios play out throughout the course of the morning with him listening to people, the people's inner monologues. Thankfully for the pacing and for the scope of the episode, they don't dwell too much on the little things like that. They pretty much keep the story moving, which is a good thing. Hector has a client come in from the Ajax company who is getting a $200,000 loan. While he is finishing up the paperwork on this man's loan, he overhears the man thinking about how he's going to bet the money on the horses, thereby making, you know, if he bets it right, he could make almost $1 million, which would pay back the loan, which was due in 90 days. So this man was going to borrow $200,000 in 1961. That would be due in 90 days. So imagine $200,000 in 1961 with a note payable in full in 90 days, which is kind of insane when you think about it, but the man had honorable intentions in the idea that he was going to pay the loan back and have enough money left over to keep his company in the black, so to speak. So it wasn't like he was wanting to take $200,000 and blow town. Although you could argue betting it on the ponies would probably have pretty much the same result. Now, if anyone's wondering, and I know you might be, $200,000 in 1961 would be the equivalent of about $2.1 million today. So this man walked into a bank, secured a loan with capital against his company, or collateral against his company, for the today equivalent of $2.1 million payable in 90 days. So that's kind of interesting. So, of course, Hector overhears the man talking about betting it on the ponies. He brings it up to the man. The man loses his mind and then, of course, starts screaming at him. Mr. Bagby, the bank president, comes out and starts trying to figure out what's going on. And, of course, wants to talk to Poole later because Poole screwed up because this was a big, you know, loan and a trusted account and that sort of thing. And Poole, you know, screwed it up. So Bagby took Ajax into his office to smooth things over and get things going. We'll find out more about that later. So throughout the day, he is listening to everyone's thoughts. Old man Smithers, that sits at the desk next to him, played, of course, by Cyril Delavante. He overhears Mr. Smithers talking about how at 4:30 on the dot, he is going to go into the vault, as he always does, since he is the bookkeeper, to check out. And while he's in there, he's going to take his briefcase, fill it with currency, and be on a boat to Bermuda by nightfall. And no one will suspect a thing, and he'll get away scot-free, and he'll live in Bermuda for the rest of his life, which I can't imagine would be more than about 10 years, because Cyril Delavante looks like he's 108 at this time. Nothing against the man. He seemed like a lovely gentleman, but he was old as could be then, and you know, but it's a nice thought anyway, pulling all the money out of the, you know, all the cash you can carry in your satchel and being on a boat to the middle of the South Pacific, or because he, you know, said it would be Bermuda, you know, or, you know, Bermuda, not the South Pacific necessarily, but destination doesn't really matter anywhere but here, I guess you could say. So the time jumps, basically we see about a third of the day, and then it jumps to 4:25 in the PM. So 5 minutes before Mr. Smithers says he's going to fill his satchel with currency and run away to the tropical islands. And Mr. Poole decides to tell Mr. Bagby about it. So he tells Mr. Bagby, and he convinces him that Smithers is going to rob the bank. And so when Smithers goes into the vault at 4:30, he's in there for approximately 30 seconds to a minute. Mr. Bagby talks to the security guard. They decide to ambush Mr. Smithers when he comes out of the vault. Mr. Smithers comes out, the bank guard grabs him, they take the satchel, they dump it out on the counter, and wouldn't you know it, it's just a couple of travel brochures, a newspaper, and a sandwich. So, of course, Mr. Bagby fires Mr. Poole. Mr. Smithers is sent along his way with an apology, and Mr. Bagby tells Mr. Poole to start cleaning out his desk and get out of here. So Mr. Poole goes to Mr. Smithers, tells him how sorry he is that, you know, like, you know, apologizes to him for basically accusing him of being a bank robber and a thief. And Mr. Smithers, you know, kind of coyly asks him, you know, like, how did you know it was Bermuda? He says, sometimes it's Fiji or, you know, somewhere else, somewhere exotic. And he says that he'd had this dream and he often will daydream about 4:30 rolling around, filling up his satchel with money and being on a boat to, could be Fiji, could be Bermuda, could be wherever, sometimes Singapore, and no one would be the wiser. And Mr. Smithers then goes on to say that he would never do it because he's old and he's set in his ways and he's pretty much too much of a coward to do so. Which is, it's really a sweet scene between him and Dick York. Cyril Delavante kind of, he kills it, kind of does a great job in that little bit of a role that he has. And it's always just a, great thing. It's just a great scene in a decent episode. So Mr. Poole goes to clean out his desk. He's putting his personal effects away into his briefcase. And Mr. Bagby comes out of his office and says that the man from Ajax was arrested for betting company funds on the horses and basically for embezzlement. And so that Mr. Poole was right about the loan. And of course, Poole was like, well, you know, I tried to tell you, but nobody listened to me. And so we wound up where we are, and here we are. So Mr. Bagby says, well, if you still want your job, it's still open. You're unfired if you want it. To which Miss Turner thinks really hard about how Mr. Poole should actually be the head of accounts since the other guy had transferred to a different branch. And that he could take that guy's old office and be head of accounts. So Mr. Poole tells Mr. Bagby that he won't say anything about Felicia as if he can get the head of accounts job. And then while we're at it, on the bank's expense, throw in a round trip ticket to Bermuda for Mr. Smithers. And then we see Mr. Poole tell Miss Turner that he'd like to see her home, and so they walk out of the bank together. They walk by the newspaper man. Poole buys another paper, throws a quarter into the box, and it knocks over his original quarter, causing him to not be able to hear people's thoughts anymore, which of course makes him more excited than you've seen him the whole day, and he's pretty much run the gamut of emotions throughout the entire day with this newfound superpower that he has. But he is chuffed as chips to not have to hear people's random thoughts anymore, and he is truly happy again, and now he's got a girlfriend, so everything is looking up. Oh, and of course a promotion, so everything's coming up roses for Mr. Hector B. Poole. And that ends the episode. So with that, let's get into the closing narration. One time in a million, a coin will land on its edge. But all it takes to knock it over is a vagrant breeze, a vibration, or a slight blow. Hector B. Poole, a human coin, on edge for a brief time, in the Twilight Zone. So, I really like this episode. I always have, even when I was a kid the first time I saw it. I've always really liked this episode, maybe because I like Dick York, because I used to watch Bewitched, you know, when it was on reruns when I would come home from school or whatnot. But I always kind of liked this episode. It was always one of those ones that was kind of a sweet story that kind of held a certain place in my heart. And of course, I again always like Dick York, and always like Cyril Delavante whenever I see him on the few episodes of The Twilight Zone that he was in. Always loved seeing him. So you almost get the idea that they wanted to make this episode sort of play as a comedy, but they didn't. They kind of took it more toward the, not necessarily serious, but not funny route. And I think it served them well. I think it was, if it was meant to be a comedy, it would have fell relatively flat like the other comedies, other comedic episodes of The Twilight Zone. So, with that being said, I really like this episode. Is it top 10? No. Is it top 20? No. Probably top 50 for sure. So it's in the top third. It's the first third tier level, Twilight Zone, because I really liked it. At least in my mind. You may have a differing opinion. I'd love to hear it. Write me an email, dimensionstzpodcast@gmail.com. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this episode, previous episodes, or future episodes. I welcome any and all feedback. But that being said, I really liked this episode. Was it kind of hokey and sort of, you know, not really gimmicky, but could it have been done better? Yes, it could have been done better. It's kind of weird that we see Hector B. Poole listening to people's thoughts and having all these issues happen till about 10 a.m. and then all of a sudden we don't hear anything or see anything in the meantime till about 4:30. Now, of course, this was done for timing, of course, with the episode, since it was a half-hour episode, not an hour-long episode, but still, this is almost an episode that would have served better to be an hour-long episode, where they could have explored the idea more and really sort of ran with it. But sadly, it was a half-hour episode, not an hour-long episode, so it could have been better, but it also, if they had turned it into a comedic episode, it also could have been much, much worse. So thank goodness they didn't. With that being said, let's move on to the bios. So, before we do that, I do want to say that I find it interesting that the men, you know, in the Twilight Zone, they always have something like a banker, or like in Time Enough at Last, Burgess Meredith was a bank teller. In this episode, Hector B. Poole, Dick York, is a loan officer, or loan originator, I guess. I'm not really sure what his actual title would be. But with that being said, I find it funny that in Time Enough at Last, Burgess Meredith worked in a bank and broke his glasses at the end of the episode. And in this episode, Hector B. Poole, Henry Bemis, Hector B. Poole, similar names, he gets sort of knocked off balance, taken down by a car. Mr. Hector B. Poole does in this episode, and it breaks his glasses. So I always thought that was possibly maybe like a little bit of a callback to Time Enough at Last. Maybe not, maybe so. I just always thought that was an interesting little thing I noticed about it, and I noticed that, you know, repeated viewings, you kind of just, you see something, sometimes something stands out. And for me, it was that. It stood out that Hector B. Poole goes through the rest of the day without his glasses because he broke them after gaining the superpower of hearing people's thoughts and whatnot. But regardless, let's move on to bios. So the director was James Sheldon, who, if you want to learn more about him, we talked about his bio in the 14th episode of the second season, The Whole Truth. where we discussed his bio. So if you want to listen to that, you can go listen to that episode and hear more about Mr. Sheldon. Sheldon directed 6 episodes total of The Twilight Zone. So he did The Whole Truth. He did A Penny for Your Thoughts. Later in the season, he will do Long Distance Call with Bill Mumy. And next season, he will do 3 pretty good episodes also. Of course, It's a Good Life, also with Bill Mumy, which is regarded as one of the top 5 best episodes. He also does season 3, episode 11, Still Valley, which is one of my personal favorites. And he also does season 3, episode 35, I Sing the Body Electric, which was the only Twilight Zone story written by Ray Bradbury. So we still have a little bit more of Sheldon's work to look forward to. Now, with that being said, let's move on to Mr. Dick York. Of course, if you want to hear about him, I've covered him at length in the episode The Purple Testament in Season 1. So if you want to hear about his life, go back to that episode, Season 1, Episode 19, The Purple Testament, where I talk about his life, and boy, what a life. What a life he had, and what a somewhat tragic and sad ending to what I understand to be a very fine human being. So if you want to hear more about Mr. York, go back to episode 19 of season 1, where I discuss in detail his life, his maladies, and his philanthropy. So let's move on to Mr. Bagby, Dan Tobin. Dan Tobin, this was his only episode of The Twilight Zone. He was born in 1910 and passed away at the age of 72 in 1982. He began his career in Hollywood in 1939, where he pretty much always played a supporting character in pretty much everything he did. His manners and mannerisms made him basically perfect for typecasting in parts such as miserly, smugly conceited, or obsequious types. And much like people that started their career around the same time he did, they did films and stage performances up until the 50s, where a lot of actors shifted into television roles, which it's funny how history repeats itself. If you think about it now, if you have people that started acting in movies during the time when the silent movies turned into the talkies, and then those people would transition basically in their second, sort of second career, or second stage in their career, into television when television became a huge medium for entertainment, and then maybe still did a few stage roles, or maybe still did a few movie roles, but they mostly were in television. The 60s and the 70s came along. Television was kind of, I don't want to say old news at that point, but you had people that the shift was going back toward the movies again, where television was kind of a thing that only people needing a job and people kind of washed up needing a job did. So, you know, you had people that were breakout stars like Tom Selleck in Magnum P.I. And then, of course, he went on to have a huge movie career. And then, of course, when his movie career tanked, or I shouldn't say tanked, maybe waned, he came back into television with shows like Blue Bloods, and I can't remember whatever ones he was on. you know. But it seems now like it's almost more of a push toward television again instead of movies. So it's kind of like it's going in a cyclical sort of pattern. And I think that's rather interesting. I might be wrong. I might be right. I don't know. Why don't you tell me? Write me. DimensionsTZPodcast@gmail.com. But of course, so Tobin sort of eased his way into being bit parts in television series in the 50s. He had a regular spot in the final season of Perry Mason in 1957 as Perry Mason's restaurateur friend, Terrence Clay. He would work again with Dick York in Bewitched and was also a regular or a somewhat semi-regular, had several appearances in the television series The Ghost and Mrs. Muir, starring everyone's favorite, Charles Nelson Reilly. He retired from acting in 1977 and sadly died 5 years later at the age of 72. Now we'll move on to the part of Helen Turner, who was played by June Dayton. Now, June Dayton was born 1923, August of 1923, and passed away at the age of 70 in 1994. Now, she was born in Ohio and was, again, a bit actress, mostly noted for being a character actress on television series and whatnot, but was also in Tora Tora Tora, which was one of her bigger, more standout sort of roles. But other than that, she basically just played bit parts in a lot of television shows. She had 117 acting credits on her IMDb. I think one of the most, I don't want to say funny, but one of the most notable things to me was she was also in the Captain America movie in 1979, which if you haven't seen it and you love, I don't want to say horrible cinema, but movies that maybe aren't the best made movies, if you like Plan 9 from Outer Space and Manos, Hands of Fate, that kind of thing, watch the 1979 Captain America. It is a sight to behold. Her last role was in 3 episodes of The Young and the Restless in 1973. She pretty much retired after that to, you know, stay at home, and passed away in June of 1994, the age of 70, due to cancer, unfortunately. And so last but not least, let's get into the man of the hour, the man who played Mr. Smithers, the ever-talented Mr. Cyril Delavante. Now, Cyril Delavante was born in February of 1889 and passed away on December 13th of 1975 at the age of 86. Now, he was born in London and immigrated to America, but not, of course, before being a, you know, an actor over there. Came to America to be in American films and television. So he did that. He was a well-known character actor of stage and screen and television. But what a lot of people don't know is that he was also basically had like a secondary career in Hollywood as an acting coach who was the acting coach of notables such as Douglas Fairbanks and James Craig. Also, in 1936, or around 1936, he was the director in charge of production at the Little Theater in Houston, Texas. Most of his movie roles, beginning around 1931, were uncredited due to his mannerisms and his acting style. He mostly acted in B-horror movies and serials, where he would usually play a dignified English gentleman or things like undertakers, coroners, or random townsfolk. On television, he would often be found playing assorted shopkeepers, accountants, like in The Twilight Zone, butlers, or academic types. He was in 4 episodes of The Twilight Zone. He was in, of course, this episode, depending for your thoughts, Season 2, Episode 25's The Silence, Season 3, Episode 22, A Piano in the House, and Season 4, Episode 17, Passage on the Lady Anne. His best on-screen moment in his career came courtesy of the 1964 movie The Night of the Iguana as Deborah Kerr's elderly grandfather, for which he received a Golden Globe nomination. The man is a national treasure, even if it's not our nation, and by all accounts was just a really nice guy. And he did really well in the 4 episodes of The Twilight Zone that we'll see him in. We know he did good in this one. And we'll see him again. And sadly, passed away about 14 years after this episode aired. So yeah, great actor. Definitely a talent. And what else can you say about a person like that? So that will do it for the bios for this episode. So let's move into trivia. Now, this was one of 2 consecutive Twilight episodes, or Twilight Zone episodes, to feature a Bewitched regular. In this case, it was Dick York. In the previous episode, The Invaders, it was Agnes Moorehead, who, of course, played Endora. Now, this episode was based on a short story written by NBC writer, producer, director Ted Neeland, which became the original inspiration for the plot of this episode. The title comes from the old English expression, "A penny for your thoughts," which dates back to John Haywood's compilation of proverbs titled "A Dialogue Containing the Number in Effect of All the Proverbs in the English Tongue." Ironically, it is a quarter and not a penny in the episode, which stands on edge, allowing Hector to hear people's thoughts. For any statisticians out there, the actual chance of a coin landing on its edge is 1 in 6,000. This episode has been thought to be, or purported to be, the inspiration for the movie What Women Want, starring Mel Gibson. Dick York stars alongside Dan Tobin in this episode. Dan Tobin would frequently guest star alongside York in Bewitched, which we talked about when we talked about Mr. Tobin. This is one of 2 episodes in his career that Dick York had that was set in a bank, the other one being The Dusty Drawer on Alfred Hitchcock Presents in 1959, which if you haven't seen that episode of Alfred Hitchcock Presents, that's a great episode of Alfred Hitchcock Presents. In this episode, Hayden Rourke plays a bank customer whose internal thoughts on his plan to use a loan to bet on the horses, heard by Dick York's character. Hayden Rourke is most famous for playing Dr. Alfred Bellows on I Dream of Jeannie. Ironically, in a second season episode of I Dream of Jeannie, Dr. Bellows becomes suspicious when Jeannie magically adds $3 million to Major Nelson's bank account. Dick York was on Bewitched. That was the counter program to, of course, I Dream of Jeannie. That was on another network, though both were filmed on the same studio lot on the Columbia's grounds. Interesting side note to that piece of trivia, the house that Dick York, who played Darren Stevens in Bewitched, was the same house that Rourke, who portrayed Dr. Bellows in I Dream of Jeannie, used. So they lived in the same house on different television series. I think that's pretty interesting. Let's move on to goofs. There's really only one. When Bagby emerges from his office to tell Poole about the Ajax loan fraud that he prevented, his mouth says Acme and not Ajax, indicating a post-production redub. So with that, let's move on to likes and dislikes. I like this episode. Like I said, they could have really screwed it up had they gone in a more of a comedic direction. Thankfully, they didn't. They kept it more sort of, not dramatic necessarily, but not funny, which helped, I think, a lot to make the episode what it was. Now, is this episode on the same level as It's a Good Life or The Monsters Are Due on Maple Street? Absolutely not. Is it just a really fun, sort of great, cute little episode of The Twilight Zone? Absolutely. It really is just a great little episode. The acting was well done. The cinematography was good. I mean, it was set in a bank, even though it's just generic bank setting. I think it was pretty much stylistically, acting-wise, and cinematographically, if that's a word, it was well done. It's not the perfect episode, but it's definitely a very good episode, and I enjoyed the heck out of it. I really thought it was well done. Again, not the greatest episode, but nowhere near the worst episode you're ever going to see either. Dislikes. I wish it were an hour long so we could sort of see more about him hearing people's thoughts and interacting with them and maybe even helping them on things or what have you. Because we kind of only get a glimpse into the superpower, and then before you know it, boom, it's 4:30. Cyril Delavante is about to rob the bank and walk away and go to Bermuda. And Poole gets fired and so on and so forth. So we skip about 2/3 of the day. A lot could have happened in that time, considering this man gained a superpower. So if I had to have a dislike, that would be my dislike. So with that, let's move on to casting for this episode. So if Hollywood were to call me, yes, Hollywood, the entity, and said, Bill, we're going to redo The Twilight Zone this episode. We need you to cast it for us. Who would you cast in the roles? And here's who I would cast in the roles. Hector B. Poole, I would cast Dev Patel. Now, if you don't know who this man is, he's an English actor of Indian descent who was in a couple of television programs over there and then hit it big in the movie Slumdog Millionaire. And then, of course, has been in a lot of other things since. Heck of a good actor, and I think he would do well in this role. Now, for Helen Turner, I think Ayo Edebiri, who You may have seen in the television series on Hulu, The Bear. If you haven't watched that series, it's a great, great, very well done series, especially if you've ever worked in the food service industry. It would be particularly interesting to you, I would think. But even if you haven't, it's an absolutely fantastic series in and of itself. Very well done. But she is in that, and she's actually a decent actress as well. And I think she would do good as Miss Turner. For Mr. Bagby, I would like to see Hugh Grant do that, because he has the ability to be a smug sort of jerk, philanderer, much like Mr. Bagby, and I think he would do well in that role as well. And then for Mr. Smithers, I could literally think of no one else to do that part in today's day and time other than Martin Short. I think that would be fantastic. If you agree with me, let me know. If you disagree with me, please let me know at dimensionstzpodcast@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you. So with that, let's get into the moral or philosophy of this episode. Honestly, I don't even know where to pick this one apart at. I mean, you'd like to think it's a watch what you think sort of thing. People smarter than me could tie it possibly to the Cold War or to something other that was happening in the time at the time. But you could also look at it from another perspective of just being cognizant that other people in the world have thoughts and have feelings, and maybe being a little more open and receptive to hearing those thoughts and feelings would bring us all closer together and further ahead as a species and as a worldwide community as a whole, if we all could practice that. So maybe that's what it means, and maybe it doesn't. If you agree with me, let me know. If you don't agree with me, let me know. Write me, dimensionstzpodcast@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you. And with that being said, I think we can bring this episode into a soft landing. If you would, stay tuned for next week's episode, where a woman sleepwalks to a morgue. Room for one more, honey. The next episode we will cover will be Season 2, Episode 17, titled 22. Join us, won't you? Thank you, everybody, for listening. I appreciate you all, and have a good night.